Hey friends, and welcome back to another episode of The Talk with me, your host, Chef Michael Silverstein. Thank you so much for being here for another episode. I got a fun guest today. He's a little bit of a celebrity, so I'm trying not to be nervous because it's actually somebody I met on set at Universal Studios, movie star and TV star, but we'll get to that in a second. But first, let me give you just a wee bit of information. First of all, go to chefmichael.com/podcast. That's chef-michael.com/podcast. There's tons of information in there about this episode and other episodes, as well as all kinds of other stuff on the website, how to get on my mailing list, how to get a bunch of my free recipes, and of course, just lots more information and a contact form if you want to reach out. So definitely go to chefmichael.com/podcast. You can also stay tuned after this for the bonus episode. So every episode, I kick out the guest when we're done and do a private one-on-one bonus episode with just me, you, and the camera. And that happens at patreon.com/chefmichael. For a few dollars a month, you can join as a member and get all those bonus episodes. There's other goodies that come with that membership. And you get to support me. Guys, like, this is not, super cheap to keep this running, but it's a passion project for me. I don't make money on this, so having a little bit of support goes a really long way if you're able and you appreciate what's happening here. So join me at Patreon. And of course, thank you so much to our sponsor, Redmond Salt. Redmond Real Salt is honestly the best salt in the game. It tastes amazing. It's packed with 65 trace minerals. It's made here in the USA. It's all natural. It's from a dried up seabed in Utah. It's really the best salt in the business. So you can pick up your salt fix at redmond.life. That's redmond.life, not .com, and place an order. They also have other cool stuff. It's not just salt. They got lots of cool products, but if you put in the discount code Chef Michael, you'll get 15% off, which is an extra bonus as a thank you for being here. The other cool thing is you can get Redmond salt at most of your grocery stores now. So if you don't want to put an online order, just go down your spice aisle at your supermarket and you'll be able to get some Redmond salt there too. Almost certainly. So it's really important to get in those electrolytes on keto, especially. So a good sea salt like Redmond's is key to a successful diet. All right, now it is time to dive right in. But after this episode, if you enjoyed what happened here, please go to iTunes and give me a review. It goes a really long way. As a newer podcast, it's really important to get those reviews so that people can find this podcast and get more information. Today's guest is a friend of mine, as I already mentioned, that I actually met on set at Universal Studios Hollywood, TV star, movie star, and Hallmark Channel TV host, we have Cameron Matheson. Hi, Cameron. How the hell are you? I haven't seen you in a couple months, but I'm really happy you're here.
No, I'm happy to be here, man. I appreciate your patience with making this happen. I could talk about this subject, every day, all day. So awesome.
Well, it's something we really connected on. And speaking of subjects, I'm sure we both know where this is going. But for the audience listening, I have not even discussed anything with you. So I'm sure you're assuming we're going to talk about food and nutrition and keto and all that kind of good stuff, because we connected on set pretty quickly about that. We actually met, for those of you listening, on an episode of the Hallmark's Home and Food Home and Family TV show, which Cameron is the host, which is really cool. And man, we have some similar, ideas around food. So, I thought you'd be a really interesting person to bring on the show.
Yeah, no, important. I think it's important to talk about it. You're right. We both have had our kind of, food journeys, and everybody is different. And I really truly believe that, there's not one size fits all sort of thing, but I still think it's important to share everybody's experience and story with what works for them, you know, because that way we can, maybe there's something in my symptoms and something in my experience that'll trigger something at home with one of you listening. And then you'd be like, oh, I'll try that. So.
Yeah, man, you just, you're speaking my language right now. Cause I've been talking about that a lot. Not only on like my social media and other platforms, but, but even here on this podcast, this, like, I don't have a keto agenda. I personally have found a lot of success on keto, but I think there's a lot of ways to be healthier. And some of the things that I've been discovering on my kind of journey through nutrition are things that aren't even related to keto, just around lifestyle and mindset, working on inflammation, working on things that have nothing, they're like kind of universal, which is kind of cool. And I see you talk about some of those things on your Instagram account as well, yeah. which is really neat to see. But I came on the show, I made a keto dessert, which was really cool because I have this theory that you can kind of have your cake and eat it too. Being healthy doesn't mean not getting to enjoy the food you're eating. And I really appreciated that Hallmark gave me that opportunity to show that. So yeah. Thank you. And I'm glad it connected.
You did a great job. You did a great job. It's a great, you do tons of great recipes. I follow you obviously as well. And I got questions about your food. Maybe we'll weave them into the conversations because, I'm always wanting to learn more.
Well, and hey, like, ask any questions. I feel like I'm always the one asking the questions on this platform. So we can trade. If you want to interview me, I'll just sit back and shut up. I'm just kidding. But yeah, I'd love to get into your questions as well.
Like the natural host, as I've got to like find out more information. No, I'll ask you stuff as we kind of go and.
Cool.
I know your journey is pretty fascinating and pretty inspiring. So I definitely, I'll probably pop in a question or two from you. If that's all right.
I love it. Well, for anybody listening or watching, because we have, this will be on YouTube. This will also be on other, traditional podcast platforms, but why don't you just quickly say kind of who you are and where our friends can find more of you after the podcast, and then we'll dive into the juicy stuff.
Sure. Well, my name is Cameron Matheson, and I work as an actor and as a television host, both, sort of 50-50 through my career. I've done things like All My Children for many, many years. I've done other primetime shows as an actor. I've done lots of Hallmark movies and Lifetime movies. I've been on Dancing with the Stars, but Entertainment Tonight and Good Morning America and all sorts of other things. But right now I'm pretty much mostly on Hallmark. And like Michael Conley said, I co-host Home and Family, which is a 2-hour daily talk show on Hallmark Channel. And it's just what it sounds like, all things home and family, lifestyle, food, crafts, DIYs, fashion, rescuing animals, little fitness tips and parenting tips. So it's a beautiful show. It's a wonderful show. We make a lot of what I would say, real comfort food, like non-keto. Like when we try to bring in something like keto or what I would consider a little bit more healthy, it gets a little resistance because it's not necessarily, I think people like to hear it and we get really good feedback when I do that, but, I definitely try to weave that in. So there's aspects in food that we're making on the show that isn't something I'd be making at home necessarily, but it's what the audience for the most part really wants to see and hear. And I embrace that, of course. And I will try and weave in and bring people like Michael on to spread some extra health information. If somebody's interested in it, then that's great. And Instagram too. Yeah. Michael already said at Cameron.
And I think that's, yeah. I just had that pop up. Well, I didn't really. Thanks, Dan, my producer, for having that pop up. I think you're very unique in that you're not afraid to bring some conversation around what healthy food can look like to a national network, which seems pretty rare. And we'll come back to that in a second, because I think it's a really interesting topic. We've never really sat down and talked about this. Are you fully keto, kind of keto adjacent? Or you just kind of work on getting flours and sugars in check in your life? Where are you at? And how did you get there?
It's a good question. And by the way, I don't think I have a true answer. I'll say this, that when I am fully keto, strict keto, I feel my absolute best. I'll probably look my best too, but most importantly, I feel my best. I have most energy, most mental clarity, less achy joints, things like that, you know. However, I live in a household where I would be the only one eating keto. So I've got two teenagers and my wife, and, you know, it's definitely doable. And I do it a lot. I'm able to kind of maintain the way that I eat in my house, but I definitely go through periods where I'm more keto adjacent, and I'm just definitely cutting out like things that I know mess me up, like gluten and certain things that are really hard for me. But when I am keto, I feel my best. So in my best version of myself, I'm fully strict keto, but no, not all the time.
I love it. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's funny. First of all, let me say, this isn't a keto podcast. So that's why I think it's important we have these conversations. There's going to be a lot of keto guests through the season. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like I think in diet culture, and you see this a lot in keto as well, but in a lot of other diet spaces, that it's like it's 100% or zero. If you're not all in, you're not doing it right. Yeah. And I kind of feel like, look, yeah. And I kind of feel like I tell people who aren't keto in my life, like, make one keto recipe out of my book a week for dinner, and you're going to feel better. You're going to feel like whatever that is, 10% of your dinners, that 15% of your dinners, you're going to feel that much better. Yeah. You don't have to be a keto head to enjoy keto food or to find some benefits, which I think is really like why I try to do what I do, to be honest, is just create food that anybody can like. It's not weird for people to have like a meatless Monday, and you don't have to be a vegan to enjoy a meatless Monday and feel like that's a good thing to do. So I don't know why there has to be this taboo around eating keto partially or doing the best that we can, like you said, with our families. It's kind of like any little changes that we can make in our life are worthwhile. Yeah. You don't have to be at 100 miles an hour in keto to get benefits.
And right.
I'm glad you said what you said.
I only volunteer information to my family, my kids, when they ask, you know, as far as like nutrition and fitness and things. But it's really interesting how certain aspects of eating the low carb, higher healthy fat diet has sort of weaved into there. And they realize, like, my wife has cut out, gluten and certain things, and just naturally has shifted a little bit more because she feels better. So it's not like she's definitely not a low carb, keto person. But my daughter also realized that, when she has cauliflower rice and some good grass-fed like steak or something, or she's like feels so much better than having a big plate of pasta and you know, whatever. So it's so important to really experiment and pay attention to your body, see how you feel, check your mental clarity. Are you taking naps after you eat? Are you feeling like sort of angry or dejected or anxious or whatever it is? Like, pay attention. You get achy joints when you eat a certain way. Like, that's inflammation. That's like a red flag. Are you burping or cough or doing that after you eat certain foods? Like, these are red flags. These are things that, I mean, you might want to pay attention to, because they mean something. I ignored them for years, and everybody would tell me that I should pay attention. And I was like, well, that's normal. Like, I just thought it was all normal, and it wasn't. And I was kind of beating up the inside of my body.
Yeah, and a lot of what we're told is normal our whole life is starting. There's new conversations happening where it's like, oh, wait a minute. It's not necessarily normal that we eat bread for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and cereal is healthy and has the Heart Health logo on it. And like, there's things that kind of like, now I'm realizing later in life, like, wait a minute, hold on a second. Is that a great idea to eat a bowl of sugar first thing in the morning? it's funny.
I mean, I used to eat cereal.
Yeah.
Listen, we're not knock. Hold on. I got a little pop up here. I got to get rid of this. I don't know what this means. I'll just say, okay. I used to. Listen, we're not knocking, you know, you feel good and you eat that, that's great. But it's just amazing what I
of course
was healthy and what it's amazing what I thought was healthy for me. And really was like some of the worst stuff that I could have been doing. And by the way, like, I think one of the reasons, to your point, that people kind of like hear the word keto and they're like, oh, another fad diet. Like, this has been around a long, long time. Like, early in the 1900s, it was used for seizures and epilepsy because Like this way of eating has been used for health reasons for a very, very long time. And so it's really kind of the Atkins diet was kind of like sort of basically formed from that earlier research on getting in ketosis, exactly, which is where the keto name comes from. So this is really, truly not a fad diet. This is a strategy of eating that has been around for, you know, decades really. And, it's just sometimes not that easy. And I think people, you know, cause it goes, when I say it's not easy, kind of can go away against the way like mainstream people eat. And so when that's the case, it requires effort and strategy and preparation. And sometimes people aren't into all that. And, like, you know,
yeah, there's like growing pains around that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like, you know, to your point, it's been around forever, in fact, like as a primal way of eating. Like we know that, you know, protein and fat are really all we need. This idea of processed carbs is relatively new. But like, even when you get into, without diving in too deep or being too like, you know, conspiracy theorist about it, but like the introduction of margarine in the late 20th century and how that sort of became this idea as being healthy, and all it is an inflammatory oil. It's like you said, it's just an uncomfortable conversation because it's just something we're not used to. Like I grew up thinking that margarine was a better choice than butter. And it just seems so bizarre that it's like the other way around. Even still to me, it seems bizarre that I shouldn't be afraid of butter. When my brain as a chef is like, butter is a bad thing.
Yeah.
I go home. It's definitely an interesting conversation.
It really is. And it's like, we eat totally opposite because they're stuck on, you know, on what they've been taught and what we grew up on. And it's, you know, I come home to see them and I'm a cancer survivor, and I'll get like grass fed filet and I'll get, you know, grass fed butter. And I'll have, you know, the other things that are involved are probably more sort of like acceptable, like, you know, veggies and things like that. But, and they're just like, and, you know, and I'll put in some good quality pink Himalayan salt on top. And I'll do these things that literally they've been just sworn to stay away from, especially if somebody's like prone to cancer. And it's so counterintuitive. And there's so many conflicting research studies, and so many of those research studies have been really geared to be able to tell people what they want to tell. They it's so tricky, and that's why we come back to like really check it out with yourself, check your levels. You know, if you're really into this, like you know, it sounds like Michael and I am. I get blood tests and I get you know, gut tests and things, and I check my hormone levels and I check my toxin levels and my mold levels, and I really am fascinated with the food that I'm eating, the way that I'm, the things that I'm doing and how it's affecting certain levels in my body. And I'm becoming more and more in tune to that. And I know what doesn't work for me. And I think for a lot of people, but, it's like you say, it's against the mainstream.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned this before, and this isn't about, oh goodness, I'm not trying to start trouble with the entertainment industry or anything, but I had, you know, I was on MasterChef and they found me from my keto food on Instagram. They knew that, Gordon Ramsay knew that. And it was like, the process took months and months and months of like working and cooking and auditioning and people getting cut. It was like 20,000 people down to 20. And the whole time before we started rolling actual seasonal, you know, seasons episodes actually on air, the keto was a whole part of my journey. And then the first day we started episode one, I was told, okay, you can no longer use the word healthy and we're not going to be discussing keto anymore. Now you're just here to cook. And it took me aback. And, you know, because of that experience, and MasterChef was the best thing that ever happened to me. It was the most exciting thing I've ever done. So this isn't a bad thing. But it was the first time when I really thought to myself, ah, okay, so media is not super interested with talking about healthy food, right? Like when it comes to television, people just want sexy food. Like, they just want something delicious on screen. And that makes sense. There's nothing wrong with that. And I trust me, my life is food. Food should be delicious and sexy and appealing. And like, I love that there's not a, we shouldn't demonize eating or demonize food. But it was a harsh reality for me around sort of how the mainstream entertainment industry can sometimes shudder a little bit away from this conversation.
Too bad.
And you mentioned this earlier, that there's a little bit of resistance. Now, also when with my it was mostly virtual. I think you were the only exception I made on my book tour, for my press tour for my book one, just because it's too cool not to go on set. But you guys were the only national TV outlet that let me talk about keto. And so first of all, thank you for that. but second of all, I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on this conversation a little bit. I mean, is the resistance kind of a political thing? Like, keto has some controversy. You find all the different mixed media. Is it not really a keto problem? It's just a diet problem. Just kind of curious your experience of this kind of discussion of keto in the media and why it feels so taboo.
It's a really good question. And I'm so surprised to hear that, like, the resistance has been sort of that obvious. I appreciate that Home and Family allowed you to come on and say your thing. I they know it's important to me, but we really, I feel like it's a good balance there. But why? I would honestly say, if you and I did things, like, I try to leave out the word keto, to tell you the truth, whenever I'm making something. So I get on there and cook too. And my recipes, I get help with my recipes.
Right.
Obviously, not unlike you, who really does a great job of kind of working through your own recipes. But I leave out the word keto in fear. Because of what you're saying, like, my incredible producers, the people at Home and Family are some of the best people I've ever met in my life. I love them. But it's so interesting, the resistance I get when I try to do something like out of the box, like say the word keto or intermittent fasting or things that are so good for you. Because I guess they know that the reaction, you know, they can hear the channels turning. People at home don't necessarily, like you say, care about it, want to hear about it. So they're so careful in making people stay tuned into their show that they want to do comfort food and food, even though that obesity and diabetes and metabolic health are some of the biggest killers in America. And so what I do that I found that works the gentlest is I just really kind of make my meal and I say why I'm swapping out regular flour for almond flour, because a lot of people have gluten sensitivities that can cause a lot of inflammation and gut issues as well. And then I'll go on and I'll be like, you know, and I'm using this instead of this. And by the way, this is a really healthy fat. This is called MCT oil. It's a medium chain triglyceride, which actually can help your body learn to use fat as a fuel source and help you burn calories using fat more. So that's it's a great healthy fat called medium chain triglyceride. So I'll try to do it in a way. Next thing you know, this is a very low carb, higher healthy fat meal with lots of nutrients in there from the, you know, I'll say I use grass-fed butter instead of regular butter for various reasons. It's got a better omega-3 to omega-6 ratio of fats, which is so good for you, as well as, like, it's got more nutrients from the grass instead of the grain-fed cows. You know, I'll get into the specifics like that without going too crazy, because people are like, that's too much information. We've had people come on that are, I'm going to leave names out, that are super healthy. They're more sort of like on the vegan side of things or the vegetarian side or pescatarian, you know, which is great. It's amazing. It's helped a lot of people. But it's way too technical. Like, they'll get into stuff way too technical. So I try to do it just quick swaps. Why? Because this makes me feel like this, and this is actually healthy because of this and this, and then I'll make it. And then, you know, I don't have to say, you know, and then I might throw in at the end. And by the way, at the end of the day, you've got a really great low carb meal if that's something that you're trying to accomplish, you know? So I'll just, the word, I mean, I don't know, you tell me, but the word keto for a lot of people sounds like a fad diet that just annoys them. It's the next, it's the next sort of big thing. It's the next South Beach diet. It's the next whatever diet. And I just, you know, so I'll just try and talk in generics and why I swap things out and why I include certain ingredients and not others. And I just kind of leave out the fact that it's a quite a low carb, a higher healthy fat meal.
Yeah, I'm smiling over here this whole time because this has been a theory of mine for sure for a long time. And I'm so excited to kind of have this conversation with somebody on the inside because I do 100% agree with you. I worry about just the word, like how the word, you know, when you start to see, when you walk into a CVS pharmacy and you see a shelf full of like random shakes and things with the word keto all over it, it starts to feel more and more just like what you're saying. Another fad diet that's going to, you know, crash in and crash out. And people ask me in my life all the time, what are you?
I want to jump in and say those products that, you know, there's certain products that actually do well, but those products for me. So here I am, I'm on a keto diet mostly for health reasons, right? So I do it more just real true health. It's really changed my life in a health perspective. However, when I do certain recipes or certainly processed keto products like that you'd find at a drugstore or whatever, most of them, I'd say 90% of them, actually make me feel worse than if I'd eaten, you know, high-carb snacks like potato chips or whatever. Like, in other words, be careful with those. Like, be careful with the processed keto products out there that are put out. They've got a lot of things that still upset and cause inflammation. A lot of their low calorie sweeteners can be really hard on your body. So, you know, just it's tricky because those actually, I've had keto, you know, like things that I've gotten from Whole Foods that I've eaten that are packed with things that really upset my stomach absolutely more than I've had a regular, you know, peanut butter cup, you know, which is with sugar and whatever. So you've got to really pay attention to your body. Sometimes the word keto, like you say, can be slapped on stuff just to sell and make money, and it can be still pretty hard on your body.
Yeah, you're speaking my language. Like, especially when you start looking at like meal replacement shakes and this and that, and they're filled with these really artificial chemicals and sweeteners and fillers, and then you get a lot of bad results are from this, not only as a consumer, but it creates a culture where it feels like it's just another scam. It's another thing that doesn't work. And somebody who might really want to lose weight might grab some of those drinks and not find results and then blame keto and say, I don't understand. This didn't work for me. There's so many things. It gets me really fired up. But to your point about the word keto and the language, you know, I think about it like this. Like, a lot of people will write to me and say, hey, I went to my doctor and my doctor said, I don't know, you know, be careful with keto. It can raise your cholesterol, whatever, whatever. But if you went to your doctor and said, hey, doc, I'm going to cut out sugar and wheat from my diet. I'm going to just eat mostly meat and vegetables. That sounds great, right? It's like the language around keto has been soured a little bit. And that's sad because there are some amazing discussions to be had. And like you started the conversation, keto's been around forever. It just didn't have that word association with it. But the idea of like, hey, I'm going to cut out potatoes and bread. I think pretty much universally, everybody knows that potatoes and bread and sugar are what cause weight gain and cause other problems. So it doesn't seem so shocking to get rid of them. I think the high fat piece, though, specifically as a keto discussion, the high fat piece scares people. And it's the high fat, I think, is one of those parts.
Too. Sorry.
Yeah, it's definitely a mistake.
I don't want people at home to think I keep talking over Michael. There's a delay. So when I think he stops, I jump in, but then he keeps going. And so I apologize. But yeah, no, but and there's also, that's also the mistake that people make. Oftentimes, I think it's the number one mistake when people are cutting back. I'm just going to say this: when you're cutting back carbohydrates are the easiest fuel for our body to use as fuel. So it's like the analogy is it's like kindling wood on a fire. It lights quick and it burns bright and it's short-lived. That's the fuel from carbohydrates. Fat is a little bit tougher to kind of get going and use as a fuel source. So those are like big logs on a fire, which take a little bit longer to light, but when they burn slowly and for a long time. It's a very efficient fuel source. So if you cut back on the carbohydrates as your main fuel source, cut carbs, low carb, then you've got to give your body something that it's going to use as fuel. So people say, I did keto, but I got exhausted. I had no energy. And that's likely, number one mistake is that likely because people didn't, we're still so afraid of incorporating some healthy fats in there. If you didn't incorporate fat, then your body's got no fuel. And it's like resorting to like trying to get fuel from protein. And that's very difficult. It's not an efficient fuel source. And so if you cut back on, it's like your fuel. So if you're having carbs, eat low fat. If you're eating, low carb, you got to give yourself some fat in order to have some fuel. Wouldn't you say that's true, Michael?
Oh my God, 100%. Yeah, 100%. And I think it's also the scary part because we've been told for 50 years that fat is bad, low fat, everything, light this, that fat is the enemy. Because logically, when we think about obesity and we think about being fat, and I hate using that word around people, it doesn't make sense that you lose fat by eating fat. There's a major, just basic disconnect if you're not kind of tuned in or educated on the subject. And so I think it creates an instant feeling of high fat. That can't be good for you. Whereas you say something like, I'm going to be a vegetarian. And vegetarianism is, I did that for 8 years. I'm not talking against vegetarianism or veganism. I'm not like one of these. Yeah, there's a lot of ways to be healthy, but it's much easier to think, oh yeah, yeah, being a vegetarian, that's healthy. But eating high fat, oh my gosh, that sounds really dangerous. And when you dive into exactly what you said, and I have never heard that analogy of the kindling versus the firewood. That is brilliant. I'm going to steal that from you. That is amazing.
It's actually not mine.
It's true.
Not mine. I got it. And I have no affiliation at all with this film. It's a documentary. It's called Fat Fiction. And I highly recommend it. I think you can find it on Amazon, Amazon Prime, and I got it from that movie. I literally watched that documentary a few times. It's hosted or narrated by Dr. Mark Hyman, and it's got a lot of nutrition experts in there, and it shows the whole history of sort of this low-fat myth and the obesity rates and the diabetes rates and the metabolic health issues getting worse and worse at almost exactly when we were recommended to cut fat from our diets and increase things like cereals and breads and grains. And it's not funded, by the way, most importantly, not funded by anybody in the food industry. This is totally independently funded. And that's what you want to look for when you're watching a documentary. There's a lot of documentaries out there that are funded by the food industry trying to tell whatever story they want to tell. So Fat Fiction is the name of it. I highly recommend it.
I want to like jump on my computer right now and go, I've seen a couple of the other, and I've watched like the documentary on plant-based. Like I try to kind of just tune in general to the food industry, but I have missed that one. So I'm going to jump in on that. So I want to kind of tie the conversation in a few ways. So, I get that language matters and I understand why the word keto is scary. It still feels like talking about getting healthy is not, it's not sexy in Hollywood. Or I don't want to say Hollywood. This isn't about Hollywood, but it's not in the food community. It's just like sort of a turnoff in many ways. And I don't know how we get around this. Like I understand that the word keto has some negative associations because I think it got associated with weight loss too heavily. To me, keto isn't really a weight loss tool. I've gained weight on keto too. Like you can gain weight on keto as easily as you can lose it. That's a very different conversation. I think keto uniquely allows for changes and creates healthy relationships around food. I think it does a lot of things for the body that allow us to go into a weight loss mode and helps with, a high fat diet's going to be more filling and keep you satisfied longer. But it's like I say, like you come to keto for the weight loss, but you stay for everything else. A low carb, high fat diet has amazing benefits for kind of whole health that have absolutely nothing to do with weight loss. And so I'm curious about how you think we can grow this message. You know, is it too late for the word keto, or is it just something, I don't know. Do you know what I'm asking? It's a hard question. And I know you don't have, you know, I'm not asking you to have an answer, but it's tough.
Yeah. It's why we're here, to discuss it. And people, you know, listening or watching can probably come up with this stuff as they're doing it too, but you know, it's great. So we're talking about like word association with keto. I mean, let's flash back a little bit. Okay. So this is 1996 or 1997. And I've always in my life been sort of an athletic guy, but I've never been super lean or whatever. And I was always just kind of like sort of big and a little bit bulky, which is fine, you know, great. Played college basketball, but was never like kind of like, you know, like that physical shape. And so, and then I get into acting, and I book this role on a big film. It's called Studio 54 with Mike Myers and Nev Campbell and Ryan Phillippe and Selma Hayek. And I'm going to be like the main bartender. And I go into the audition. I'm wearing a t-shirt, and the director, like I do the audition. He's like, that's great, man. That's amazing. However, you need to lean out. You need to lean out a little bit for this role, because this was in the 80s. So Studio 54 in New York City. Everybody was kind of, you know, doing coke and partying and being up all night and doing lots of unhealthy things. And they were pretty lean. They weren't kind of big and bulky. And I was like, okay, I get it. That's fine. And I walk out of the audition. And I was like, all right, I got the role, but how am I going to do this? And so coming full circle back to word association, it was when this diet called the Atkins diet was around. And at the time, people thought that was crazy. And there's lots of sort of unhealthy aspects about it now, but the basis of it. So I went on Atkins. I just tried it for like a week, and it was insane how much better I felt, and also how I just was all of a sudden burning fat as fuel and getting lean like I'd never imagined in weeks. And I had like a couple months before this film started. So my point being that even though there wasn't like a protein sort of monitor initially with Atkins diet, like you can eat all the protein you wanted and things, which we now know is a little bit hard on your body. And their idea of fat didn't matter whether it was coming from certain sources or not. So there's unhealthy aspects about the Atkins diet. But now the word Atkins diet is literally associated with generally with being so unhealthy. And honestly, when I did it, my cholesterol went down. I got super lean. I had the best energy I've ever had. I felt my best. I booked that role. And then I went on to book all my children. And all these kind of things happened to me all of a sudden through this Atkins diet phase. I went off the Atkins diet, and I had so much trouble staying lean after that until the sort of the keto diet came around, and obviously has similarities, but it's a little bit more structured and based more on research and health aspects. And now the keto diet sort of has that same connotation. And honestly, I genuinely believe that the best way to really kind of get it more accepted is just by living by example and not by like, and I really try to like anything, you know, I go to these meditation classes and you learn about it. And, you know, to come in and say, you should do this, I just try to be that. I try to be it. I try to show by example. I try to accept other people's views and really kind of celebrate other different views all the time. But at the same time, it's a balancing act. And I can't tell you, I love everybody on my show and in the kitchen and helps me so much at home and family. But when I tell them that I made these chocolate avocado brownies using avocado as the fat, and I, you know, I made these, they're incredible. Like you don't taste the avocado. Like they shamed me. They flat out, like, I actually got angry for one of the first times. I was like, they were trying to probably be funny, and that's fine. But it's like not nice. Like, I don't get it. Like, these are incredibly healthy ingredients, and it tastes amazing. And you get like kind of shamed or looked down on or poo-pooed or like you say, like knocked out. They know so much more than you. And I'm like, okay, all right. It's just, it's really frustrating. And because I try to be super accepting of all things and not everybody is. And I just try to, I guess my point in saying all that is I just try to be steadfast. I just try to keep showing up and being, you know, polite and accepting and show by example and keep making suggestions and trying to incorporate certain things into the show. You know, like you say, you bring up entertainment, and I know it's not all about Hollywood, but man, oh man, do people watch, and man, oh man, are all these shows big influencers out there in the world. So, social media and television are huge at the way that people can learn.
Well, and that's why I brought it up. Like, that's what I was saying. Like, I'm not trying to like call anything out or make drama, but the entertainment industry ultimately kind of controls or has a big impact on a cultural narrative in many ways, right? And so that's why I was so grateful that there was a national outlet, at least on television. Print seemed a lot more open, albeit People Magazine in a week. National television is tough with this, like with this discussion. And it frustrates me because it's like, how can I get this message out? I thought your advice was amazing though. And when I'm thinking back as you were talking just around like, maybe don't call it keto. Like I did a bunch of local news spots where I was making like a juicy grilled skirt steak with chimichurri, which is just delicious. It has nothing to do with keto. It's just delicious. And I did that all over local news on like the virtual tour. And people love it. And it's like, oh, by the way, like, yeah, this happens to be keto, but like grilled steak with chimichurri is just delicious anyway. Nobody questions it. So it's this, I do see both sides. And I also recognize the power of the entertainment industry in this country to kind of set a cultural tone and to kind of, in many ways, influence the narrative. But your story of the avocado brownie is funny. I was laughing because I had a similar experience on social media. A friend of mine's a huge, huge, huge food influencer on TikTok. And their most successful viral video is this deep fried mozzarella donut. So they like melt mozzarella in a donut ring and it's then deep fried. And it's a cheese, it's just a solid, it's like a mozzarella stick in the shape of a donut. And it's got like millions of likes. So she challenged me to do it keto. And the only thing I have to do to make it keto is change the breadcrumb. Yes. So instead of panko, it's a pork crumb, you know, pork rind crumb.
That's the best swap out ever. Yeah. That's the best swap out.
Yeah, so easy. Otherwise, it was the same recipe, okay? And I posted it to TikTok and, you know, thousands of people. And I was bombarded with nasty comments calling it like a heart attack on a plate and all this stuff because I started the video with keto mozzarella donut or whatever. Meanwhile, on her page, her page is like ice cream, cookies, food porn, amazing stuff. And it's drool worthy, all of it. That's why she's so successful. And I love it. But it's funny that like I made the same dish as her and took out the breadcrumbs and I'm the heart attack on the plate. And that was the story that I was thinking of as you were talking about the avocado brownies. Right. Cause it's like, there's just like the word keto. I bet you if I just didn't even mention keto at the start of the video.
That's a better example. It's a better example because of the contrast. And we're not saying don't enjoy, you know, like cookies and donuts and breadcrumbs, but it's like, just so people know at home, there's absolute research and proof by scientists that like heart disease is there's no correlation between fat and heart disease. And there is correlation between processed carbohydrate and heart disease, you know, like sugar and carbohydrates. It's like undeniable. And that's why the food industry slowly is changing the food pyramid. Very slowly, they're making adjustments because they, time after time, they can't actually prove a correlation between heart disease and fat consumption. So, and there is absolute correlations between processed carbohydrates. And this is what you see in Fat Fiction, and this is what you see in these other documentaries that are really, really fantastic. Highly recommend. But that's a great That's so frustrating. Like, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. That's frustrating.
But it's perception. And you know, unfortunately, we can only do what we can do. And I think you've given me some good insights here. And I'm just going to keep doing what I do. I'm just going to keep showing that, you know, low carb food is delicious, and just keep sharing that with people. And like, hey, maybe somebody's listening right now, and slowly every little, you know, every little person that we influence, it kind of like change one thought in their brain and plant a seed, is something, you know. And we're not here. I know, I can say for a fact, I know you're not here to share an agenda, and I'm not either. Like, I'm not pushing that keto is a magic cure for everything, or that there's one way to be healthy. But I think this is a really interesting conversation, just in talking observationally around how there just seems to be this taboo, and I'm not really sure how to beat it. And since I'm so in it, it's so important to me, because I want to keep sharing this food with people. And then it's like I hit a wall, because it just there's resistance.
I got an idea. Why don't you try this? The next time you pitch something, the next time you call it a tasty anti-inflammatory meal. Try that. Like something like that. Like, in other words, I'm going to make this delicious meal that you can have that, you know, like that reduces inflammation and gives and makes you, and helps you burn fat. You can say that. Like, I mean,
I love it.
Reduces inflammation and helps you burn fat. People will be like, this should be on the cover of everything. This should be like, you know, in our top of the hour on, you know what I mean? If you say that, be just for people at home to know that a lot of people experience, myself included, for sure, reduced inflammation. So, you know, inflammation by sometimes bloating, you know, inflammation by achy joints. Inflammation is actually the root cause of a lot of stuff that we have. But you eating keto or low carb, higher healthy fat diet, reduces inflammation almost in everybody that tries it. Also, by doing that, it helps you burn fat as a fuel source. So, you know, if you did that, if you called it an anti-inflammatory recipe that helps you burn fat as well, people would love it.
Man, I'm absorbing this all in, and I got to give you a lot of credit, man. I love that you're so clear and just so well spoken and so knowledgeable, and that you do, you know, you do bring this conversation to a larger audience. So just from me and from a lot of people in this community, I really do appreciate what you do, and I hope you keep doing it. I'm going to keep doing it as well. I feel so strongly that there's a real conversation to be had here around getting rid of some of this nasty stuff in our diet. Yep. But to do that, we have to kind of get out of this idea of keto as a diet and just start talking about anti-inflammatory properties, low carb, reducing sugar, and forget about these kind of diet words.
Yeah, that's key.
It's like, I almost think that by keto working well for weight loss, it kind of shot itself in the foot, if that makes any sense, because then it gets associated with weight loss, and people who aren't interested in weight loss, who don't want to hear about it, who don't want to hear about a diet, just tune out.
Yeah.
I mean, no pun intended, since we're talking about the entertainment space, but they literally tune out, because it's just like, oh no, I'm not dieting. I don't want to hear that. It's just an instant, it's just an instant kind of closing of the blind if they hear that word keto.
Try pushing. So,
thanks for your insights.
You got it. And I just want to throw this at the very end. I know we're wrapping up. I want to say this, that I believe that in my experience, I don't believe, so in my experience, intermittent fasting along with eating keto has been very, very successful and helpful, reducing inflammation, also getting into ketosis and things like that. The reaction for that has been even worse than trying to eat low carb. Like, in other words, people hear fasting and they think you're starving yourself. They think you're like, it's crazy. Yeah. There's, you know, eating disorders, things like that. It's the cheapest and easiest thing that you can do medically healthy for your body out there. There's nothing better. I'm telling you right now, incorporating a little, taking a break from food, giving your body a break from digestion will probably, even more so than eating low carb, have the biggest impact on your overall health. I'm just going to put that in. You can do your own research. But I'm a big believer.
No, I'm with you. We're going to do a whole episode on fasting because I am so with you. Like one of the keys you said there is giving your digestive system a break. Yeah. Super powerful stuff. Again, and I don't really think fasting is a weight loss tool. It's a feel-good tool. Yeah. If there are weight loss benefits, that's great, but it's a feel good tool and an anti-inflammatory tool. And I meant, you know, I really wanted to ask you this before we wrap up, because I mean, we could do this for hours, but I know, you know, you mentioned this and I know your story, obviously, you battled with cancer and thankfully you won, but where were you on your nutrition journey? And do you think that kind of staying healthy and working on inflammation and reducing sugars helped in that fight?
Yeah. So it's a good question. So my cancer had been growing slowly for a long time in my kidney. I had kidney cancer and had surgery and I got really lucky and had a very successful surgery in 2019. So over a year now, cancer free. They believe that because, so from what I understand, and I don't want to sound like a doctor here, cancer feeds off of essentially sugar as fuels cancer cells, and it grows and needs sugar to survive. So because I've eaten so low sugar for so many years, low carbohydrate, low sugar, off and on, like I've shared, but generally that's my standard. Like I just don't eat a lot of carbs, don't eat a lot of sugar. That's generally how I live. And they feel like that's one of the reasons my cancer was so slow growing and didn't have the energy to spread into my lymph nodes, into my lungs, et cetera, because it had been there for a long time. Now, with that said, I have a lot of issues detoxifying. I've since my cancer journey, I've started measuring my toxin levels. I had high mold levels and very, very high environmental toxins, which everybody knows is a main contributor to all types of cancer, especially kidney cancer. And my kidney function, liver function has been has not been great. And so they, you know, they really believe that the mold and the high levels of toxins, as well as, not to get too specific, but I was taking medication for acid reflux for many years, and there's a definite research that shows that those medications were also directly correlated to kidney cancer. So there's specific things that I was doing that my body is just sort of prone to, the toxins in the mold, which I've been working on hard. They're very, very tough to eliminate, but I still work hard on them, as well as taking medications for years prescribed by doctors for acid reflux, which I fixed by diet alone, by the way, everybody. I finally got off that medication.
Same.
Yeah. Just by diet, just by going keto, I got rid of my acid reflux in 3 days. And I'd been on medication for 10 years.
I was 2 weeks, but same. Yeah. I was on 2 weeks. It took me 2 weeks.
Let's say, yeah. So it's pretty powerful stuff. So you got to be careful with those things. Some people don't have the issue. Some people's liver and kidney function can detox and flush it out, no problem. But mine didn't. And so I'm working hard on that. So I think those are the two big contributors, they believe. Of course, we don't know for sure. The medications I took for years and years and years, my low kidney and liver functions incorporated, you know, with environmental toxins, as well as high levels of mold in my body, which I'm working on.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, I'm thrilled to hear. And of course, we're not going to know for sure, but I'm sure it didn't hurt to have that sugar reduction. All right. You mentioned you have some questions for me. You mentioned you had some questions.
Oh, yeah,
for
I did.
Me.
I wanted,
you got anything before I go?
I wanted to ask you this. First of all, I know you pretty much develop your own recipes. That's what you do, right? So you experiment and develop your own recipes, correct? Right?
Yeah.
Remind me again, what sweetener that you were using when you were on the show? I think it's your main go-to low-calorie, natural sweetener.
Yeah, it's allulose, which is relatively newer on the market. It hasn't been fully approved like in other countries. Like I think Canada has their FDA, whatever their Canadian FDA hasn't approved yet. It's a very new sweetener. There's still a lot of research on it. But they call it a rare sugar. So it's naturally derived, but it's not a sugar alcohol. I believe it comes from like the peels of a plant or something. So it's not a sugar alcohol, which is good. And it has basically zero glycemic impact. And it honestly tastes just like sugar. You could turn it into caramel. It's really awesome stuff from a culinary perspective, and from a health perspective. So I have been all over Allulose for a couple of years now. Even when it was hard to find, cause like as a chef, I had to find something that kind of reacted the same as sugar in the food. But Allulose is the sweetener that I use. It doesn't have that cooling or chemical aftertaste. That said, I do want to kind of say that every person has a different reaction to the different kind of sugar-free options. Yeah. Some people have adverse reactions to, you know, to anything. So I would say if you're going to try any sweetener, if you're going to make changes in your life and take sugar out, try it. Like certain ones, a couple, and it's not about which ones are right or wrong. It's just about what works for you and your body. A couple make me nauseous. A couple just taste bad to me. Allulose seems to work the best for me, and work the best in my recipes. But most of my recipes can use whatever granulated sweetener you prefer, except for recipes that turn into caramel, because allulose is really the only thing that actually turns into caramel the way sugar does.
I see. Do you have trouble with erythritol and other sugar alcohols?
I actually like erythritol in terms of like, you know, it makes it, I don't have any adverse reaction to it, but I do feel it gets that kind of cooling effect. And when you try to cook it down into a caramel, it crystallizes and gets a little bit bizarre in cooking. But that's what I was using pre-allulose on the market and is still sort of my silver medal second choice.
I got you. Yeah, I have a lot of troubles with sugar alcohol just for gut issues. I got a lot of sort of like bacterial imbalance.
Exactly.
So if you have like SIBO or gut issues, erythritol can be really hard on your gut. Which is too bad because it's in a lot of great keto recipes. But I think if I remember, allulose was a little bit easier on my gut than erythritol. Stevia is the best for my gut, but it also is the most that is sort of like, it's got a very specific taste and flavor, and my wife can't stand it. I need that one.
Yeah, it gives me like my belly just doesn't love stevia, nor does my tongue. Really? But it is definitely the most. I believe it's sort of the most natural. It's the easiest to process out of its source. It's just a leaf it's a relatively, you can buy a stevia plant at like your local garden, like bite on it. It's a very, and it tastes like that. It's a sweet leaf. And so stevia is definitely the most natural. It requires the least processing, fallen in love with
allulose. Do you recommend monk fruit, as well, or is that actually has calories, right? Monk fruit.
Yeah. Monk fruit does have some calories. Also typically when you buy monk fruit, it's actually mixed with erythritol. So most of the things that we buy that are called monk fruit sweetener are actually a blend of erythritol and monk fruit, because monk fruit's extremely concentrated, much like stevia where you can like put a couple drops. Monk fruit's really concentrated. So my understanding is that in order to make it granulated, it's typically blended with erythritol. And I just personally find monk fruit to be the most, leaves the most aftertaste for me. But again, there's no right or wrongs. Somebody, I can't remember who it was, but somebody in my life recently told me just to remember the acronym SAME: stevia, allulose, monk fruit, erythritol. Those four, are at least safe and healthy for us. When you get into sucralose, aspartame, maltodextrin, maltitol, some of those other things, you know where I'm going with this, are not great for us for many reasons. And they're highly processed and have glycemic impacts, sometimes more than sugar. Like maltitol is used in a lot of like products that are labeled as sugar-free and kind of labeled for keto and people with diabetes. But maltitol has almost double the glycemic index. In other words, it'll make your blood sugar spike almost twice as much as regular cane sugar. And it's in a lot of sugar-free products and candies and stuff. So kind of learning a few of that, but sticking with the same acronym, stevia, allulose, monk fruit, erythritol, and then just finding which one of those tastes the best and feels the best on your gut is kind of the easy way to think.
Beautiful. Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I appreciate you, man. This was really fun. I love that the world of entertainment connected us. I look forward to seeing you in person one day soon. And I really appreciate your time today and your insights. I learned a lot. And I just always have a good time talking to you, my
Likewise.
Friend.
Likewise, man. You're an inspiration. And anytime, I hope we continue to do this, and we'll have you on the show hopefully real soon, man, when we can get people traveling and coming back on.
I love it, man. I know it's been a struggle in Hollywood for the last year now already. It's been a real struggle. I know lots of industry folks who have been having a really hard time. It's not easy, but we're getting close here. We're getting close to the end of this insane year, I hope. So I'm wishing you lots of health and happiness, you and your family, and just like sending out some love to the home and family that I got to meet. You're right, man. The people there are unbelievably nice. I also thought it was really cool because I've been on a national TV show. I thought it was going to be a set, and it is a set, but it's like a real house sitting on Universal backlot. And it's really funny because it's like a real house. It's just a beautiful home that the whole ceiling is gone, and it's covered with a bajillion lights and stuff. But it's funny because I always imagined showing up and it'd be in a warehouse, like in a box. But it's actually I know it's built as a set, but I think some people listening always get a kick out of, like, you know, kind of the behind the scenes aspect that home and family set.
It's one of the few things that actually, you know, it is what it appears to be for the most part on television. You know, whether we can continue shooting in that house, I hope in the future there's rumblings that we might have to move to a set, which would be a real buzzkill because it adds a lot. But for now, we'll enjoy every moment in that house.
I love it, man. Absolute pleasure having you today. I can't thank you enough. I really enjoyed this talk, man. And we'll be talking soon.
Beautiful, buddy. Be well, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much. And guys listening and watching right now, meet me over at Patreon, patreon.com/chefmichael. I'm going to kick Cameron off camera, and then we're going to talk just me, you, and the camera and kind of reflect on everything that me and Cameron just talked about. So stay tuned for the bonus episode at patreon.com/chefmichael. And if you haven't yet, maybe grab yourself a copy of New Keto Cooking, my cookbook that really does make keto food sexy. And maybe to Cameron's recommendation, I'm going to stop calling it keto and just call it delicious food, because that's really what it is. Thank you guys for being here. Thank you so much to our sponsor, Redmond Salt, for supporting the podcast so that we can keep the lights on. Make sure to grab yourself a bag of sea salt, because it's such an important part of a healthy diet, is getting in those electrolytes. Do that at redmond.life and put in the discount code ChefMichael for 15% off your order. I love you guys so much. I can't tell you what it means to me to have you here listening and watching. I'll see you guys on the next episode. Talk to you guys very soon. Thanks and bye.